This boy jumped out the window before. Out, just straight out the window. There is no stopping him. I'm afraid. I've been telling people I was afraid, but at the same time, it was nothing I can do.
Dayton is a city in Ohio that is steeped in a vibrant history, rich culture, and a spirit of innovation. It was founded in 1796 and named after the Revolutionary War figure, Jonathan Dayton. Over the years, Dayton's claim to fame came in the form of aviation, as the birthplace of the Wright brothers, Orville and Wilbur, who invented and flew the first successful motor-operated airplane. In the College Hill area of Dayton lies the residential neighbourhood of Kensington Drive. It's just on the outskirts of the city, close to the Miami Valley Golf Club, various strip malls and schools. This tree-lined street is made up of single-family homes, each adorned with wood panelling and offering convenient off-street parking. The home at number 1934 was just as unassuming as the rest of them, with its white wood panelling and a lean-to attic built to the left side. Nothing about this home stood out among the others. But at around 2:30 p.m. on the 13th of December 2019, a 911 call came into the dispatch centre from this unremarkable home. It was from a man named Al Mutahan McLean, who told the operator that he had found his 10-year-old son, Dakota Collins, unresponsive.
911, what's the location of your emergency?
Yes, my son is unresponsive right now.
Your son is Hold on. You need, what's your address?
I'm sorry, what was that?
What's the address where he is?
The address is 1934 Kensington Drive.
1934 Kensington? So you said your son is unresponsive?
Yeah.
As the 911 operator asked for more information, McLean blurted out that his son had medical issues.
Okay, how old is he?
He's a child with a lot of medical issues. So what he do is
Stop, just for a minute. How old is he?
He's 11 years old.
Okay.
In 3 days.
And when you say he's unresponsive, is he breathing?
Yeah, but barely. I mean, he got skin tone.
The operator told McLean to lay Dakota down on the ground and watch his chest for any signs of breathing.
Okay, he's laid out on his ground now.
Okay, he's on his back?
Yes.
Okay, so I need you to check to see if his chest is rising, like look at it, and is it rising up and down, rising and falling like he's breathing? Check that, and then let me know, and also if you can feel or hear any breath out of his mouth or nose.
No, it's not rising up and down.
McLean reported that Dakota's chest wasn't moving and said that there was something coming out of his mouth.
He got something coming out of his mouth.
Okay, what's coming out? What do you think is coming out?
I'm not sure what it is.
Okay, I want you to turn him on his side. Turn him on his side. That way, in case he vomits, he doesn't choke on it. So go ahead and turn him on his side, okay?
Okay, I did.
Can you clean that out of his mouth a little bit? Take your fingers and clean it out of his mouth just so he doesn't choke on anything?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Let me know when you've done that, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Whatever in it coming out very, very rotten.
As the operator took McLean through CPR, he commented that Dakota's breath smelled real rotten.
Yes.
Is that
I'm blowing in his breath.
Okay,
and it smelled real rotten in the inside of his stomach.
As McLean performed CPR, he could be heard retching in the background of the phone call. When the operator pressed for more information, McLean again said that Dakota was suffering from mental health conditions.
I mean, just mental behavior. See, he just hurts himself all the time.
Okay.
He wake up, don't get his way, slam his head, eat his shit.
All right, well, I understand. Okay.
It never ends.
He said that his son often harmed himself and slammed his head against the wall if he didn't get his own way. When both paramedics and police arrived at the home, they were shocked to see the condition of Dakota. Not only was he unconscious on the floor, but he stank of feces and urine. He was also covered from head to toe in bruises. But this was only just the beginning. Dakota Collins was born to parents Al Mutahan McLean and Robin Collins on the 18th of December 2008. Robin grappled with drug addiction, prompting her to seek assistance from her friend, Anita Bredesen, shortly after Dakota was born. Anita agreed to care for the infant while Robin endeavoured to overcome her struggles. For the next 11 months, Dakota found solace in Anita's family, where he blossomed into a cheerful and contented baby. Despite sporadic visits from Robin, it was evident that she still wasn't equipped to provide full-time care for Dakota. The situation then took a dark turn when, during one visit when Dakota was 11 months old, Robin lashed out, prompting intervention from Child Protective Services. Subsequently, Robin relinquished custody of Dakota, and she was convicted and sentenced to probation. In the aftermath, Dakota found himself in the foster care system and moved between several temporary homes over the following years. Despite the instability, Dakota maintained connections with his family, particularly his maternal grandmother, Kelly Sandoval. Kelly fondly recalled Dakota as a bright, funny, and a compassionate child, always eager to lend a helping hand. Kelly tried herself to get custody of Dakota, but she was turned down because she was already raising other children in the family. Dakota's uncle, Stephen Crabtree, liked to take him fishing with his own children, and said of him, "He was a very sweet, loving little kid. He always had a smile and would warm anyone's heart." Among Dakota's cherished memories was Halloween, a holiday that he eagerly anticipated each year. He loved dressing up and embarking on trick-or-treating adventures through the neighbourhood alongside his family. Initially, Al Mutahan McLean was absent from his son's life, and as Anita recalled, "He never called, he never saw Dakota until he got whiff. I suppose human services or child support would have gotten a hold of him." It wasn't until a DNA test showed that McLean was Dakota's father that he became involved in his life. At the time, Anita and her fiancé were in the process of trying to get custody of Dakota, in the hopes that they could formally adopt him in the future. But after that DNA test proved that McLean was Dakota's father, the four-year-old was uprooted from his familiar surroundings and sent to live with his father in Wisconsin. At the time, McLean was living with its fiancé, Amanda Hinsey, and her sister, Jennifer Ebert. Shortly after Dakota arrived at the home, McLean was arrested after hitting Hinsey in the face with a pipe, dragging her by her hair to a car, and then punching her in the face. The charges against McLean were later dropped, and in 2014, McLean and the family moved over to Union City in Tennessee, without informing Robin. She wrote to the Wisconsin court, "He ripped him out of school and left. I have no idea what's going on. Without Child Protective Services involved in any information, I'm not even sure how he is." Hair thinning affects approximately 1 in 2 women, but you're not alone if you're experiencing it. Join over 1 million individuals who are taking action with Nutrafol, the leading dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement. With more than 1 million people experiencing thicker, stronger, and faster-growing hair with reduced shedding, it's the ideal solution. Recognizing that everyone's hair is unique, Nutrafol offers multiple formulas tailored to your specific needs. I've personally been using their vegan supplements, and my hair has never been healthier. Nutrafol addresses the root causes of thinning, including stress, hormones, environment, nutrition, lifestyle, and metabolism. Building a hair growth routine with Nutrafol is simple. Purchase online without a prescription and take the first step towards visibly thicker hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering Morbidology listeners $10 off their first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code Morbidology. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelt Nutrafol.com, promo code Morbidology. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code Morbidology. Later that same year, McLean filed with the Wisconsin court his intention to move with Dakota to Pennsylvania, and Robin signed a notarized letter agreeing to the move. However, just days later, Robin wrote a handwritten letter in which she said she was pressured into signing that first letter. Ultimately, the court ruled that McLean could move with Dakota to Pennsylvania, but instead they moved over to Dayton in Ohio, where McLean's fiance, Amanda Hinsey, purchased the house on Kensington Drive. In Dayton, Dakota enrolled at Horace Mann Elementary School, where teachers fondly described him as an energetic and playful child. Despite the upheaval in his life, Dakota continued to thrive in his new environment, adapting to the challenges with resilience and determination. But trouble was brewing at home. And in March of 2016, Hinsey called police and said that McLean was drunk and refusing to leave the home. When police arrived, Dakota was asleep in his bedroom, but McLean was intoxicated and argumentative. Police advised Hinsey of the eviction process and then went on their way. Just 2 months later, Hinsey called police again and reported that McLean had punched her in the face and wouldn't leave the home. Once more, police responded to the call, but once more, they left again without filing charges. Then in July, McLean called police and reported that he had been assaulted by a woman, but then he abruptly hung up and no investigation took place. The following month, McLean was served with a civil probation order after a woman he met locally reported him for assaulting her. However, the protection order was dismissed because the incident didn't meet the threshold for an order. After McLean called 911 to report that Dakota was unresponsive, both paramedics and police arrived at the home. The first to arrive was Officer Clinton Evans, and he was met outside by McLean. He immediately told the officer that Dakota had a history of misbehaving, rolling around in his own excrement and urine, and said that he had hurt himself with a broken chair leg. As he took the officer inside, he showed him the broken chair leg and then said, "I took that away from him and put him in the shower." He said that he found Dakota unresponsive, but when Officer Evans approached the 10-year-old, he was stunned. Not only was Dakota unresponsive, he was covered with cuts and bruises from head to toe, and a putrid smell was coming from his mouth. Paramedics soon arrived, and they began performing CPR before quickly bundling Dakota into the ambulance and speeding off towards the hospital. When Dakota arrived at the hospital, doctors and nurses were horrified to see the condition of his body. While he had cuts and bruises from head to toe, they were especially on his torso, back, and buttocks. His entire body was purple, and there was a noticeable bruise to his forehead. As doctors raced against the clock to try and get Dakota stabilized, detectives were at the family's home with his father. McLean told the detectives the same thing he had told the 911 operator, that Dakota had mental health problems that manifested in self-harm. While they spoke, Hinsey and Ebert arrived with 3-year-old Josiah Nichols, who was McLean's half-brother. He had taken custody of him after his mother said that she didn't want him anymore. During the routine investigation, detectives meticulously combed through the home, documenting their findings with photographs. They noted a well-furnished downstairs area, equipped with running water and a stocked fridge. A security system had been installed, evidenced by a live feed displayed on the living room television, offering a glimpse of the exterior surroundings. As detectives surveyed the walls adorned with family photographs, a glaring omission caught their attention. Not a single photograph of Dakota could be found among the displays, featuring Josiah and pets. Moving through the main floor, they encountered a master bedroom, meticulously kept in order, alongside a second bedroom designated for Hinsey's sister, Ebert. Adjacent to these rooms lay a child's bedroom, unmistakably belonging to Josiah, furnished with age-appropriate toys and clothing suitable for a three-year-old boy. However, the absence of a designated space for Dakota became increasingly evident as detectives continued their exploration. The lack of clothing fitting a 10-year-old and the absence of toys suitable for his age underscored the disconcerting reality that Dakota's presence within the home was not acknowledged. In the basement, there was a fourth room made up, but it was for the family's dogs. Excrement peppered the floor, while several cages were placed up against the walls. Returning to the living room, detectives were directed by McLean to a door, supposedly leading to the attic. Despite McLean's apprehension, the detectives insisted on exploring this area as part of their investigation. Ascending the stairway, they were met with an overpowering odour of urine and feces. The attic, which was shrouded in darkness due to boarded-up windows, was illuminated only by the beams of the detectives' flashlights. As their lights swept across the space, they encountered a grim sight. Filth, excrement, and bugs scattered across the floor, devoid of any semblance of comfort or humanity. In a further exploration, detectives came upon a locked door in the attic and compelled McLean to unlock it. What they discovered inside left them stunned. Within the confines of this hidden room lay a bloody tarp strewn across a filthy lawn chair, likely serving as a makeshift bed. In a corner, they found a disassembled video camera, suggesting surveillance or documentation of some kind. It became unmistakably clear to the detectives that this dismal space was where Dakota had lived a very bleak existence. Despite the best efforts of the medical team at Dayton's Children's Hospital, Dakota's fragile body succumbed, and he was pronounced dead shortly after he arrived. The solemn task of preparing his body for autopsy fell to Deputy Coroner Dr. Brian Casto, who meticulously documented the evidence of both recent and older injuries. Among the disturbing findings was a peculiar branding on Dakota's back, consisting of four letters, with the first letter appearing to be a T. This branding was located in an area that was inaccessible to Dakota, disproving any possibility of self-infliction. Further examination revealed deep bruising, both externally and internally, particularly concentrated on his back and neck. The internal bruising, extending through all layers of the neck muscle and directly over the spine, was reminiscent of injuries typically seen in individuals involved in severe vehicle accidents. Dakota's head bore severe bruising, including hidden bruises beneath his hair, as well as on the right side of his forehead, chin, and within the upper and lower left lip and nasal cavity. Upon reflection of Dakota's scalp, The pathologist noted deep bruising throughout all areas of his head. Moving down his body, Dr. Castro uncovered further evidence of trauma. Bruising was evident on Dakota's chest, both internally and externally, extending to his stomach. His back and buttocks displayed signs of severe external and internal injuries, indicating sexual assault, most likely with some kind of object. The autopsy revealed disturbing findings in Dakota's lungs, where fluid accumulated, suggesting submersion in water. Additionally, his pruned hands further supported this hypothesis. Numerous rib fractures hinted at further violence inflicted upon him. Then the examination of Dakota's digestive system yielded troubling results. Contrary to expectations, the contents of his stomach and bowels were identical, indicating that he had consumed feces. The cause of Dakota's death was determined to be blunt force trauma, compounded by compressive asphyxia and water submersion. The pathologist unequivocally classified his death as a homicide, leading to the prompt arrest of his father by detectives. While being transported to the police station, McLean appeared to be nervous.
You can't get the death penalty, all right?
You can or cannot.
You can. For murder.
He asked about the death penalty, but the officer informed him that that would be up to the prosecutors. Are you ready for unexpected emergencies? Many wonder about being left without electricity or food for extended periods. That's where 4 Patriots steps in, offering a range of products tailored for such situations. Tools that you can use now that might just save your life later. Take for instance their Patriots Power Generator 2000X. Harnessing the boundless power of the sun, this ingenious device can power everything from your TV to crucial medical equipment, or even your refrigerator. And then there are their top-selling survival food kits, delicious and designed to last for 25 years. No electricity? No problem. Simply boil water over a fire, simmer and serve. With over 2 million satisfied customers, 4 Patriots has become a trusted source for preparing you for any disaster. I had the folks at 4 Patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/morbidology, so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/morbidology. But hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/morbidology. As detectives delve deeper into the case, a disturbing pattern of abuse inflicted upon Dakota began to emerge, spanning back to 2015 when Dakota was just in the first grade. It was during this time that his father initiated a campaign of physical and psychological torment, often subjecting Dakota to confinement in his bedroom without access to food. Evidence of Dakota's suffering became increasingly apparent to those around him. Despite his young age, he bore the unmistakable signs of neglect, arriving at school each morning, smelling of old urine and feces. Dakota's art teacher, Jenny Watson, recalled,
"Dakota was, at the heart, a really, really sweet little boy. He had a few little issues of acting out and stuff. I think now we know why. He was starved for any attention, whether good or bad attention. He frequently smelled."
Dakota also arrived at school sporting badly executed haircuts that had been administered by McLean in a form of punishment. These botched haircuts, coupled with the smell emanating from him, made Dakota an easy target for bullies, exacerbating his already dire situation. When Dakota showed up at school one day with head injuries that had become infected, Child Protective Services were alerted. Adam Packard, one of Dakota's teachers, said of him,
He was a very emotional child. I wouldn't say he was necessarily violent in any way. He would definitely get down on himself and be really sad. He did tend to cry quite a bit. But, I mean, he was one of the sweetest children. He loved to make people laugh. Absolutely loved to make people laugh. And just happy-go-lucky all the time, which is something I kind of reflected on over these past couple weeks, is what an amazing kid he was to be so happy-go-lucky every day and then find out what he's going home to every day. It baffles me.
The principal, Sherry Moss, recollected.
Pretty much, Dakota was a well-rounded student here at school. Friendly, helpful. He wanted to just kind of please people, so anything that he can do to help out.
Teachers at Horace Mann Elementary School recognized that Dakota could benefit from assistance, and they donated him clothing and washed his own clothing for him.
And then I know that it was noted as far as with body odor, because he would come to school and clothes filthy and just reeking beyond just your normal boy being musty type thing. And so with making sure we keep extra clothes here for students, extra underwear, you know, things like that, for students to change if need be. But they will have to come down to the office to change clothes. And then one of the other things that I can say is that as far as with extra food, during breakfast or lunch, Dakota would, you know, have extra food because he was hungry.
After receiving offers of assistance from the school staff, McLean's reaction was one of fury and resistance. Any attempts to intervene in his parenting methods was met with opposition, with McLean venting his anger by calling the school and berating them for meddling in his affairs. In his quest for control, McLean demanded daily updates on Dakota's behaviour, yet he was setting impossibly high standards. Any deviation from perfection would result in severe punishment for Dakota. These punishments were not only physically brutal, but also psychologically damaging, designed to instill fear and compliance. One such punishment involved Dakota standing in the living room, holding a loaded book bag, a ritual that he repeated daily from the moment he returned home from school until bedtime. Failure to meet his father's expectations would extend the punishment throughout the entire weekend. McLean's methods of discipline were not confined to conventional means. He resorted to shocking Dakota with a taser or striking him with a metal spatula. Rather than protect Dakota, both Hinsey and Ebert actively encouraged the abuse, ensuring that any deviation from their expectations was swiftly reported to McLean, perpetuating the cycle of violence and fear within the household. Following Josiah's arrival at the home, Dakota was banished to the attic, and he was forced to witness the affection lavished upon the newcomer while enduring abuse and neglect himself. The stark contrast between the care shown to Josiah and Dakota's mistreatment only deepened the wounds of his already traumatized existence. Then on the 11th of May 2018, McLean informed the school that Dakota was unwell and wouldn't be coming in that day. Given the school's previous concerns regarding Dakota's welfare, they promptly contacted police to conduct a welfare check. Suspicions of abuse were also reported to Child Protective Services, prompting further investigation. However, the response from police fell short when nobody answered the door at the family's home, resulting in the case being closed without further inquiry. Over the subsequent year, despite additional calls to Child Protective Services, McLean remained one step ahead, meticulously orchestrating his family's responses to investigations. Each time authorities visited, McLean prepared his household for scrutiny, coaching Dakota and the others on how to behave. These calculated efforts ensured that any investigations were futile, allowing McLean to continue his reign of terror unchecked. Dakota bore the brunt of McLean's fury, subjected to brutal physical assaults that left him with injuries carefully concealed under layers of clothing. As interference from Child Protective Services persisted, McLean reached a breaking point. He abruptly withdrew 9-year-old Dakota from school under the guise of homeschooling. While school had its own challenges for Dakota, the sanctuary it provided from the horrors of home life was abruptly stripped away. McLean fabricated educational plans, falsely claiming that Hinsey would oversee Dakota's education, further perpetuating the facade of normalcy. Under the regulations of the time, all communication was conducted via mail, effectively rendering Dakota completely isolated from the outside world. Cut off from any potential witnesses, the abuse inflicted upon him by McLean escalated unchecked. With no one to monitor his actions, McLean felt emboldened to subject Dakota to even more horrific treatment. Over the course of the following year, Dakota endured confinement in the cramped and dimly lit attic, where his suffering reached unimaginable depths. Initially granted freedom within the attic, Dakota's desperate bid for escape in November of 2018 culminated after he launched himself through the attic window. He was rushed to hospital for medical attention, and his injuries prompted concern, although no allegations of abuse were formally reported. Despite the offer of psychological counselling, McLean declined to follow through with making appointments, opting to maintain control over the situation. Instead, McLean pursued alternative avenues, inquiring with juvenile court about services available for children under 10. Upon learning that these services were primarily therapeutic in nature and posed no risk of Dakota's removal from their custody, McLean chose to forego this option. Upon Dakota's return from the hospital, McLean, Hinsey, and Ebert took drastic measures to tighten their grip on him. They sealed up the attic window, confining Dakota to a small lightless portion of the attic, behind a locked door. Stripping him of every shred of dignity, they discarded all of his clothing, leaving him naked and vulnerable. Further adding to his torment, they forbid him from using the restroom downstairs during the day, forcing him to defecate and urinate in the attic where he lived. One afternoon, Dakota crept downstairs to use the restroom, but he was spotted by Josiah. Dakota was only allowed downstairs to the restroom at nights, when Josiah was asleep in his bedroom. While Dakota had only been trying to use the restroom, and was nude because his clothing had all been thrown out, McLean accused him of trying to show off his naked body to Josiah. After this incident, McLean began hurling homophobic slurs at his son and calling him girls' names. Dakota wasn't allowed to just exist in the attic either. McLean forced him to stand naked and cross-legged and bent over, sometimes for up to 20 hours per day. A video camera had been installed in the attic so that McLean, Hinsey, and Ebert could monitor Dakota from the comfort of the living room. If he ever moved out of one of the poses, McLean would storm up to the attic and inflict a barrage of abuse on Dakota, punching him and kicking him. With each day that passed, Dakota became more hungry and more drained from the abuse and neglect. But things only got worse for Dakota, as his father began forcing him to eat his own feces. He had no other option than to defecate in the attic, since he was forbidden from using the restroom during the day. The first time that it happened, Dakota refused, but McLean responded by putting on a glove, lifting up the excrement and forcing it into Dakota's mouth. After that, Dakota knew that he was expected to eat his feces, or face further punishment from his father. Another chance to save Dakota came on the 14th of May 2019, when his mother, Robin, called police and asked them to conduct a welfare check. Robin was supposed to see her son 4 times a year and speak with him on the phone at least once a week, but she hadn't seen him and she had only spoken to him a handful of times. She told the 911 operator that McLean had just called her up and told her that she needed to take Dakota back.
Telling him how angry he is with him and how if I don't come and get him, something's going to happen and he's going to take him to a group home and drop him off, and how when he acts up, how he disciplines him with a belt and he'll lock him in the room.
McLean told Robin that he hated Dakota and told her that he often disciplines him with a belt or locks him in a room.
I believe that his father is abusing him and hurting him and that he's too scared to tell anybody because his father won't let him talk to anybody. I've been trying to work with him to talk to my son and he's gave me a bunch of things that are very concerning. He locked him in his room. He tried to jump out a window. He sent him to school in a diaper. He's pulled him out of school. He whips him with a belt. Just a bunch of stuff that's very concerning to me.
By now, Robin was much more stable. She had overcome her drug addiction and she was living in a comfortable home with her 8-year-old daughter. She wanted to regain custody of Dakota, but it wasn't that simple because of her previous abuse conviction. Police did pay a visit to the family's home, but they closed down the case after noting, Dakota is being taken care of, and he still has behavioural issues. Outside the House of Horrors in the neighbourhood, Dakota was so isolated that most of the neighbours weren't even aware that a child had been living there. There was constant barking coming from inside the home, so they knew that there were dogs, but the entire home was devoid of any evidence that a 10-year-old child lived there. There were no toys outside, no bike propped up against the home, and nothing to indicate that a little boy was slowly withering away in the dark attic. As one neighbour, Lia Fisher, said to News Centre 7, "It's just so sad. It's something that's so close, and no one really even knew about it." While neighbours were unaware of the abuse behind the door of 1934 Kensington Drive, there was some evidence that something was amiss within the family, other than the multiple calls to Child Protective Services and police. Back in 2016, a 9-year-old boy was discovered wandering around the streets nearby. When police approached him, he said that his father had forced him to hold a heavy book bag and do squats as a form of punishment. His father was none other than Al Mutahan McLean, but the child wasn't Dakota. It was one of his half-brothers. The little boy had just recently been sent to live with his father, after behavioural problems arose while he was living with his mother. He told police that he wanted to return to his mother and that his father had monitored him with cameras both inside and outside of the home. Thankfully, this little boy was able to get away from McLean, but Dakota wouldn't be so lucky. Have you ever Googled your name? Brace for a shock. Your personal data, from addresses to phone numbers, is often freely available, harvested by data brokers. That's where Aura steps in to protect you. Aura scans the web for sensitive information such as emails, passwords, and social security numbers. You can receive real-time alerts if anything is found. Aura also advocates for your privacy by removing your data from broker sites, putting you back in control. Are you tired of spam calls and junk mail? Well, Aura has you covered. And if you're a victim of identity theft, their fraud resolution team provides white glove assistance. With Aura, safeguarding your digital identity is easier than ever. For a limited time, Aura is offering Morbidology listeners a 14-day free trial, plus a check of your data to see if your personal information has been leaked online, all for free, when you visit aura.com/morbidology. That's aura.com/morbidology to sign up for a 14-day free trial and start protecting you and your loved ones. That is aura.com/morbidology. Certain terms apply, so be sure to check the site for details. On the day before Dakota died, McLean had been out drinking, and when he returned home intoxicated, he turned his attention to Dakota. From one of the bedrooms in the home, Ebert could hear Dakota crying and begging no more. But this was a common sound within the home. At the time, Hinsey was asleep on the sofa, but she awoke to find McLean punching Dakota hard on his stomach. The next morning, before Josiah awoke, Ebert called Dakota down from the attic to use the restroom. She observed that he was walking, but he was unsteady on his feet and held on to the wall. He stumbled several times but managed to get back to his feet, only to be elbowed hard on the back by McLean. Once back in the attic, Dakota was ordered to put away his folding chair, where he slept at night, and was then forced to bend over in what had become his signature pose. Dakota was struggling to move, and because he didn't act fast enough, McLean ordered him to lie down on his stomach. After he lay down, McLean stood on his back and raised his hands to the ceiling so that he could push down on Dakota with all of his weight. Dakota was then told to stand in the punishment pose, as McLean went downstairs to the living room to watch television. As he sat in the living room, he yelled up to Dakota, calling him a mama's girl and hurling homophobic slurs at him. After a while, McLean went back up to the attic with a bottle of hot sauce that he planned on pouring on Dakota's rectum, a punishment that he did quite frequently. After this, McLean then grabbed Dakota and threw him around the attic forcefully. He grabbed him by his ears and then dragged him downstairs. He forced Dakota into the bathroom and ordered him to clean his shorts. But when Dakota didn't move fast enough, McLean told him that he was going to drown him. He filled up the bathtub and forced Dakota's head underwater several times. Dakota was then sent back up to the attic, and from the monitor in the living room, Ebert watched on as Dakota lay down on the lawn chair in the fetal position. She observed McLean punching Dakota repeatedly on the bottom before breaking off a chair leg and using it to sodomize Dakota. McLean then came back downstairs and binned the chair leg. Dakota never made another sound from inside the attic. When McLean was interrogated in the hours after Dakota died, he feigned ignorance.
We are going to be interviewing you in regards to the crime of a homicide. Okay.
Homicide, that's like premeditated.
Homicide is kind of a catch-all for somebody that died more than likely not of natural causes. Make sense?
Yeah.
So it kind of covers a lot of things. It could be murder, it could be...
That's the thing. I don't even know why my child is dead. You hear me? I still don't know.
If your child's dead?
No, they just told me he dead, but they didn't tell me what killed him or anything like that. You hear me?
The detectives asked McLean what had happened over the course of the day leading up to Dakota's death.
Well, this is what happened. I ain't slept in about 3 days, right? The kid keep falling down the stairs, keep knocking his head around. It looked like something was wrong with his stomach last night that I noticed. And I gave him some water to throw up. You know what I mean? I had him drink like several cups of water because it looked very odd normal. And I know that he used to eat in his own shit. So I just wanted to make sure that he was okay. So he drank the water. That was it. And I guess he goes back upstairs acting out some more. I mean, jumping off the banister, shitting everywhere, pissing everywhere, the usual. might I add. I've been dealing with this for probably like since he was 2 years old. He's been doing this.
McLean once more claimed that Dakota had inflicted all of the injuries on himself and said that the bruises came from him rolling himself down the stairs or banging his head against doors and walls.
So I'm very tired. I ain't slept in 3 days, so I'm just sitting there. And here he come rolling down the stairs again, ba-doom, ba-doom. So I tell him go back upstairs. A little while later, I go up there. I see a stick in his ass, like a chair leg. So I ask him, what is he doing? And he's just steady, you know what I mean? Just steady doing what he do. This ain't the first time he tried something like that. So I see blood on the ground, and I asked him to pull it out. You know what I mean? Blood squirted immediately. Now I'm freaking out. I'm like, hurry up. You need to get downstairs so I can get you in the shower. You know what I mean? And see what's going on. So at the time, I didn't think nothing of it. I just see that he bruised up as usual. Seeing that y'all, he never thought that he'd find any way, any type of way, anything to use just to put a bruise on his body. So as a parent, I just put him in the shower. I put him in the bathtub to try to, get some of the swelling to go down or whatever the situation may have been, you know, clean him up, make sure he was good. So I'm sitting on the couch. He like, Dad, come here. No, he like, Dad, help. So I come up the stairs to help him. And that's when I noticed his body was cold, very, very, very cold. So I took him downstairs and try to rinse him off, you know, to see if he had shake out of it, wake up. I had no clue of knowing that he was sick to that extent or that this is going to go anywhere near this far. I just figured he was doing his normal acting out. He was kind of tweaking a little bit, you know what I mean?
He said that Dakota eventually fell unconscious, but said that he suspected he was somehow to blame, as if he had inflicted the injury himself. Detectives, of course, were not buying McLean's story.
First of all, he had marks all over his body.
It's every day. Now, sometime I had to spank his behind just to prevent him from hurting himself. This boy jumped out the window before. Out, just straight out the window. There is no stopping him. I'm afraid. I've been telling people I was afraid, but at the same time, it was nothing I can do.
McLean then admitted that he had moved Dakota to the attic, but said that it was because he couldn't control his bowel functions.
Well, let me ask you this. He stayed upstairs.
Did he stay up there?
He stayed up there, right? Well, you keep talking about him pooping and peeing and everything up there.
Yeah.
Locked up there?
We never locked him up there. The lock's been on the house since we had the dogs when they were smaller. They'd get into fights. We just never took the time to take them down, you know what I mean? But we got pit bulls there. And we ain't separated, made it be blood all over everywhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's what the locks is for. He would come down. I would invite him to watch TV. He's my son. He was handsome. He looked just like me. You know what I mean? And I would invite him to sit down, watch TV, and this, that, and the third. And he would just shit and piss. The smell was so loud. I can go up there and clean it every day. And 5 years from now, you'll probably smell it.
After McLean's interrogation, he called Hinsey from jail.
Like I said, I don't know what's going to become of this. You already know I didn't. Only time I ever did anything to him was try to get him to control himself. That's the story. Stick to it. That's it. You hear me?
I know, man. Every time we say something, they flip the words and make it seem bad.
Yeah, don't let them flip it.
I know.
Just 2 days before Christmas, McLean was charged with numerous counts of child endangerment. These included rape of a child, felonious assault, and 4 endangering children counts. The reason for the lesser charges was because Dakota's autopsy had not yet been finalized. But once it was, McLean was charged with misdemeanor involuntary manslaughter. After more details about the abuse of Dakota became apparent, both Hinsey and Ebert were arrested as well. They were originally charged with endangering children, but this was then upgraded to misdemeanor involuntary manslaughter. McLean's charges were later upgraded to 4 counts of murder, along with the other felony charges. Eber quickly pleaded guilty to all of the charges against her, but sentencing was scheduled for a later date. After the charges were handed down, McLean requested a mental competency evaluation, but it found that he was competent to stand trial. Both he and Hinsey subsequently pleaded not guilty to all of the charges against them. After details of Dakota's horrific life made headlines, questions were raised about how more wasn't done to protect him. Both police and Child Protective Services had received numerous reports that he was being abused, but time and time again these were closed down without a proper investigation. In an effort to spark change, Dayton Public Schools employees wrote to Ohio leaders seeking a change in state law to better protect children who are at risk of abuse and who are removed from school. Joni Watson, who taught art at the school Dakota was enrolled in, explained the legal change they were seeking. If a child is pulled out of a public school who has had any reports to child services concerning abuse or suspected abuse, then there needs to be something additional put in place to ensure that the child is checked on. Meanwhile, state lawmakers announced that they were requesting an independent review into the handling of the case. County Administrator Michael Colbert announced that an internal review had been launched, which would be separate to the criminal investigation. The purpose was to see whether there were any missed opportunities to save Dakota. Dayton police also announced that they too were conducting an internal review of all the interactions they had with the family. Dakota's grandmother, Kelly, thought that the review was pointless. She stated, "Why waste the time on doing it? We already knew it happened." She said that it was evident that nobody had followed up diligently on the numerous concerns for Dakota's welfare. She commented, "So that's how it fell through the cracks. They just glanced at him. Oh, he's okay, no problem, let's close the case. Or not even be able to get a hold of him. Oh well, he's not at home, let's close the case." She said that everybody had let Dakota down, including herself. Dakota's mother, Robin, felt the same way and stated, "I failed him. My family failed him. We have to take some of that responsibility. As his mother, I have to take that responsibility. I feel guilty as hell." On the 20th of January, around 100 people gathered for a memorial service for Dakota. It was held at the Presbyterian Church in Dayton and was organized for the community while the family had a private funeral. The organizer, Polly Parks, said that while Dakota may be dead, he would never be forgotten in Dayton. She said to the group of mourners, "It's comforting to me to know that Dakota is no longer suffering. He is free of all that chaos and confusion. He is free from all the physical, mental pain of abuse. Dakota is at peace." The next month, Montgomery County Children's Services were granted custody of Josiah, McLean's half-brother who had been living with Dakota. Nobody else in the family wanted custody of him, including his mother, Tamika. The investigation into the agencies involved in the family ultimately found that they had failed to share information with one another, which is permitted under law. When Child Protective Services investigated the family, they were unaware of McLean's criminal background and unaware of the numerous times police had come out to the family's home to investigate various reports. A list of recommendations was unveiled to impose child abuse investigations, and most of these addressed the lack of communications. It was also recommended that all relevant parties should be interviewed, and that caseworkers need to review all prior histories of adults in the home. Dakota's estate subsequently filed a lawsuit against the county and Montgomery County Children's Services, accusing them of failing to perform in their duties. Michael Wright, an attorney for the family, stated, "To be brief, he was tortured. He was starved. He was beaten. He was raped. Just the most horrific things a child could go through, Dakota went through, and this was all preventable." He said that if one person had have done their job, then Dakota would still be alive. The family also sued Dayton Children's Hospital and said that a social worker at the hospital had failed to assure Dakota's safety after he was brought to the hospital a year before he died after launching himself from the attic window. According to the hospital, they had been led to believe that Dakota was sleepwalking when he jumped and severely injured his foot. However, when Dakota was at the hospital, he had told this social worker that he was scared at home, and it was noted that he had numerous cuts across his body. Despite this, they sent him back to the home where he was ultimately killed just a year later. The estate settled their lawsuit with Montgomery County for $3.25 million. Then in February of 2021, changes in the law were finally made to ensure another child not suffer the same fate as Dakota. The new bill, HB number 4, would strengthen requirements and oversight of child abuse and neglect reports. Under the new bill, all public child-serving agencies in Ohio would be required to promptly report any complaints they receive regarding abuse or neglect to law enforcement. On the 8th of September, both McLean and Hinsey pleaded guilty to all of the charges against them. McLean, Hinsey and Eber returned to court on the 28th of September to be sentenced for the murder of Dakota. Before the sentences were imposed, prosecutor Matt Henk detailed the life of abuse that Dakota had experienced. He said that the only thing more horrific than the facts of his death were the facts of his life that he was forced to live. McLean's defense attorney, Michael Boer, was seeking leniency, telling the judge, "The story that Al is a monster who abused his son for years is simply false." He said that despite all of the evidence, he didn't believe that Dakota was abused for years, as if that would make the situation any better. Judge Dennis Adkins turned to McLean and said,
"What you did was pure evil. You provided no mercy to your son and deserve no mercy from this court."
He then sentenced McLean to life in prison with a minimum sentence of 51 years. Hinsey was sentenced to 22 to 27 and a half years in prison, while Ebert was sentenced to 8 to 12 years in prison. When it comes to safeguarding children, child protective services and police play crucial roles. While these organizations are entrusted with the vital responsibility of intervening in situations of abuse, neglect, or danger, they are not infallible. The murder of Dakota Collins served as a stark reminder that when they fail to do their job, it's innocent children who pay the ultimate price. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my newest supporter up on Patreon, Leslie. As you all know, Morbidology is a one-woman team, so the support up on Patreon seriously goes such a long way, and it really helps to keep independent shows such as Morbidology running. If you'd like to support me up on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. In exchange for your support, I upload ad-free and early release episodes, bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus that aren't on the regular podcast platforms. And I also send out a handwritten thank you note, along with some cool merch, such as stickers, pins, t-shirts, and fridge magnets. If you'd like to support the show in another way, please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you may be listening. Ratings and reviews are a super easy way to support a show that you enjoy, and I genuinely do appreciate all of the feedback. Remember to check out morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read some true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.